Hello and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Marina Perkis.
And I'm Gemma Forte, and there's so much to pack into this week's Trawl. Britain's sort of stopped working, really. I think it needs switching on and off again. Meanwhile, people on Twitter have got loads of ideas on how to fix things, but sadly, they're not in government. Meanwhile, it's been insanely hot, like seriously sweaty, but we're all focused on not freezing in the winter. But before we get to all of that, Marina, you are in France. This is exciting. You're literally coming to us live from the home of baguettes, cheese and properly capped energy bills. So bonjour, Rodney. And how's the big road trip going?
Bonjour. It's actually lovely. The car drive here wasn't that much fun. We drove, and there were three under three kids wise in one sort of minivan, which wasn't that much fun. Yeah,
and we break massively fun.
No, it wasn't. We basically had to take it in turns amusing them before they turned into the devil child. But
Did you have to have awful nursery rhymes on? Did you have to do the wind, the bobbin up and all that rubbish?
100%. Baby Shark on repeat. I freaking hate that song. But no, we got here. We actually braved the border. And I thought this is interesting. So I'm actually on holiday with my siblings, their families, my cousins, their families, lots of kids. And we braved the border. And in fact, one of them didn't. He bottled it at the last minute and he decided to book flights just in case there was all that border chaos. And guess what? He was the only one that voted Brexit.
It was always really inconvenienced himself.
I said to him, you know what, Jack, his name is Jack, but I won't give you any more information about him. But I said to him, you know what, Jack, you should have been forced to go to the border and endure whatever chaos was there. But anyway, we got here. But
I'm amazed. I mean, I'm just thinking long car journey. There would have been an opportunity there just to have our podcast on loop. I don't know how that would have gone down. Maybe divorce. Maybe the kids like actually crying into an abyss. But you know, we could have got loads of downloads. So just saying.
I know. Sorry, I should have done. I'll do it on the way home. Is that all right?
Yeah, good.
But it's been good. Like, I mean, day one though. So all my family know what I sort of do on the side with regards to all the politics stuff. So, and I never steer the conversation that way because I think it just gets really awkward, right? But it did get steered. Is that a word? That Ooh. Way. And
so are they not like-minded? Oh, are you not all kind of singing from the same hymn sheet, as it were?
I mean, a lot of them are just apathetic. They're just rightly so, you know, they're focused on their lives, on their kids, on their routine. But then what I think is more triggering is the ones that do think that they're a little bit invested in politics, like my brother-in-law, right? Mm. And he said the line, Gemma, that triggers me. Cool. He said, "They're all as bad as each other."
No. I've had a lot of that on Twitter today. I did a sort of list of things that are going wrong in the country and put something like, "Oh, Tory Britain, what a hoot!" And there was quite a lot of support for it, but there was quite a few people going, "Well, it'd be just as bad if they're all the same." And it's so irritating because whilst the opposition aren't perfect, not by a long stretch, wowee, they could not be as bad as this lot, in my opinion. And I really worry that sort of apathy is what will allow the Tories to get in again. Imagine. So did you take him to task, Marina? Did you take him to task? Because your pregnancy hormones are up as well. Did your head start spinning round? Did you foam at the mouth?
I did. I gave it my level best without being personal, right? But do you know what I find as well? And I'm sure our listeners have this, if they find themselves in a similar scenario, you get flummoxed by the bollocks that people talk. And like, I feel like I spend my whole time now just dispelling bullshit myths that are put out by the government. And it's, you know, right-wing shit rags. There's like one which keeps coming up again and again, which is, they left the coffers empty. There was no money left, all the debt. Listeners, here's one to write on the back of a napkin, right, for when you come up against this. Since the Tories came into power in 2010, the national debt has more than doubled. It now stands at more than £2 trillion. They've increased the national debt more than any Labour government combined, all despite implementing this programme of austerity that was supposed to balance the books. I fucking hate that term. Sorry, don't want to say the F word. Anyway, in reality, it's done the opposite. And we also conveniently forget, by the way, that Labour governments, and I'm not like Miss Keir Starmer, Miss Labour, but Labour governments ran a surplus. They actually ran a surplus between 1998 and 2002, which is a crazy achievement. And they've achieved so much. Whereas the Tories didn't. What did they leave us with, Gemma?
Well, I know you're going to go on, Marina. Deep breath. Come on. Okay. Go for it.
Okay. And again, I feel like this is back of a napkin or, you know, guys, get your iPhones out. Put this, just a few bullet points so that in your notebook app, so that when you have this situation like I had, you can just list this stuff off. Because otherwise it just doesn't spring to mind, right? Here we go, right? Well, this is just some, a sprinkling, if you like, of the stuff that this Tory government, successive Tory governments, are going to leave us with. A busted economy, trillions of debt, billions lost to corruption, a shattered democracy, a House of Lords stuffed with Tory cronies, Gavin Williamson as a Sir, Jesus Christ. Entire industries decimated by Brexit, GDP hammered by Brexit, highest inflation in the G7, 50% of our population tipping into fuel poverty, thanks to that and rising fuel prices, droughts, and then of course there's, you know, people dying unnecessarily due to a collapsed on NHS. And then just to give you a little bit of pinched, like, I know maybe, and even if we do want to pretend that that Labour left the coffers empty, this is what they left us with. 20% GDP growth per head in real terms, a fall in unemployment, properly funded NHS. Guys, we had waiting lists down from 18 months to 18 weeks. That sounds like heaven now, doesn't it? 100 new hospitals, not wings, not DIY jobs. Corporation tax was actually kept low. Schools properly funded, 100k more teaching assistants, increased teachers' salaries, up 17% in real terms, minimum wage, tax credits, child poverty cut by 25%, more devolution to Scotland, Wales and NI, the Good Friday Agreement, and cancelled debt for the world's poorest countries. But you know what, Gemma? They're all just the same.
Blimey, O'Reilly. There's a lot there. And actually, for me, austerity, what a false economy. All it's done is it's made us live in a country where everything's shit. You haven't even got any libraries left. Oh, dearie me. Anyway, on a week when I was on Jeremy Vine with Mike Parry, he told me that the solution
to Mike Foghorn Parry. Oh, I know him well.
He's actually sort of like really quite sweet. But yeah, in fact, he was so loud, I was a bit rude at one point on air. I said, oh, for goodness sake, Mike, we need to harness your wind power and use that. And Jeremy was like, Gemma, he's just being passionate. And I was like, okay, get back in my box. Anyway, he told me that the solution to the energy bills crisis was to start fracking. I can't even go there, Marina.
Oh,
anyway, most other people have had climate change at the forefront of their minds because it's happened, frankly. And apart from anything else, Britain just isn't built to cope with the sort of temperatures that you'd ordinarily expect to find in Turkey or Nairobi. I've got a loft bedroom. I've basically nearly burnt alive every day. And then every time I think about plugging my fan in, I'm like, but then I'll be destitute. It's just not ideal. And Amanda, who's at Pandemonium, was taking the mick out of people, Brits here, who were wanging on Twitter about how there's never any reason to go abroad when it's this hot here. And she just put, when I go abroad, I don't have to cook or clean, and there's aircon, a pool, and I've got F all to do all day, Darren. You utter salad.
I love that for the utter salad reference. That's going to be an insult that I use going forward.
It's a good.
And then David Frost piped up as well on the issue of climate change. Now, not everyone will know, by the way, who David Frost is. So for our listeners who don't know, and lucky you if you don't, but David Frost is the guy who negotiated the now completely rubbished withdrawal agreement from the EU. This is the one, you know, with the NI protocol that needs to be ripped up and started all over again. And it's the one that we signed up to spend £42 billion on just divorcing ourselves from the EU. Yeah, so him.
Oh, the bill that wasn't going to happen. That's that one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's his handiwork. In fact, do you know what? It's hilarious, right? So after he negotiated that pathetic withdrawal agreement, he actually tweeted saying, "I'm very pleased and proud to have led a great UK team to secure today's excellent deal with the EU. This deal has now been shown to be absolute, like, crap." And sorry, I'm digressing, but he even got a peerage for it, Gemma. So that's Lord David Frost to you and I. And in fact, when I was trying to hunt out for that tweet, I discovered the bugger's blocked me. I don't recall ever being like, what did I say?
Oh, no, Marina, you're sounding a bit innocent now. You've probably called him a lemon or something at some point, surely.
And what's happened to free speech, Gemma? Free speech.
Free speech, exactly. You're a lemon. Yeah, anyway. Also, just the, David Frost, really and truly, the fact that he is a lord. I mean, we had the other lord we were talking about last week, didn't we? We were talking about Zach Goldsmith. All these flipping lords. It drives me mad. It's such a stupid concept.
I know. And he, anyway, he resigned from his post as Brexit, whatever, shit deal maker. Probably because he couldn't be asked with dealing with the Brexit chaos that he caused. And then this week, he pops up in the Daily Mail on climate change, saying, "There's no climate emergency and that Britain should end focus on medieval wind power." Medieval! This is coming from a bloody lord. To which Mike Galsworthy tweeted, "The man has always been remarkably stupid, but of late he's become increasingly dangerous in his attention-seeking for his braying ideas."
I know, it's just like the scientists are saying this. So, shush, you're not a scientist, mate. Truss has also taken part in the saying massively stupid things Olympics this week, funnily enough, in the face of climate change. She's got something to say as well, you know, that well-known eco-warrior, Miss Truss. So one of the interminable hustings, Adam Bienkoff, tweeted that she'd said, "I think one of the most depressing sights when you're driving through England is seeing fields that should be full of crops or livestock, full of solar panels," which is weird in itself. It's sort of, you get this vision of her in a Morris Minor just driving through fields, sighing. But Henry Mance tweeted, "The sun has been shining almost non-stop for 3 months, and Liz Truss's policy response is, we should have less solar power. You could not make this up."
Oh, God. Oh, the thing is, this is her, again, speaking to the Tory party membership. It's those people that don't want these eyesores. They don't want things like solar panels. They don't want onshore wind. So she's appealing to them.
They might have been quite sweaty last week, though. They might be changing their tune. I don't know.
Hopefully. Maybe they don't sweat. Maybe not. Maybe. I know someone else that doesn't
like
sweat.
Like Prince Andrew. Prince Andrew's been absolutely fine, walking around cool as a cucumber. So Brexit is a terrible mistake. I think there's a clue as to this person's political leanings in their handle, @Brexit_mistake, replied, "I think one of the most depressing sensory assaults when you're driving through England is seeing fields that should be full of crops being harvested by Eastern Europeans stinking up the place with rotten fruit and veg."
But do you know what? That's such a great point. Like, what the irony of Liz Truss talking about wanting, you know, livestock in field and crops in fields. It was their bloody Brexit that means crops are rotting in fields because not enough workers are around to pick them. And I had to actually double check this. 100,000 pigs being killed and then burnt because there are not enough workers to butcher them. Like, yeah, whoa.
Really upsets me when some people can't afford to eat and there's food banks. That is a lot of sausages and bacon, quite frankly. And I'm serious, not being consumed. And just the death of pigs for no reason is vile. Not many veggies happy with that one, I tell you.
I know. Another thing that is just makes that whole point of hers bananas is, are you sure, Liz? Are you sure that's what you want, livestock in our fields? Because last I checked, you dropped the UK's trousers and signed an Australia-New Zealand trade deal that totally screwed over British farming. So much so, this is brilliant, so much so that the Kiwis and Aussies, they can't quite believe it themselves. And you will hear this from this clip from New Zealand TV that was tweeted by @AlexTaylorNews, along with the words, "They visibly can't believe their luck that British farming has been made the sacrificial lamb for a deal hugely beneficial to New Zealand with negligible benefits for UK farmers who get nothing in return." Have a listen. Hi.
British farmers have reacted with shock to the terms of a new free trade deal with New Zealand.
The deal will see kiwi meat imported without tariffs, and farmers in the UK say they get nothing in return.
Did we get that, listeners? Zero tariffs for kiwi farmers and nothing in return for British farmers. And it gets worse.
It's us surrendering to you, New Zealanders, and giving you a great deal, and we're getting nothing out of it.
While the deal is expected to boost New Zealand's GDP by $970 million, or around 0.3%, the impact on Britain's economy is expected to be negligible.
Jacinda Ardern has ruled the agreement a win-win.
Unlike a rugby match, I think we can literally both come off the field feeling like winners.
But take it to the TMO.
Do you feel like a winner?
No, of course not. No, we're losers. I mean, that's just untrue. And it's a bit disappointing of Jacinda to say that, because she's normally a woman of truth.
The truth is, farmers here are worried for the future.
It'd be sad if it all sort of went away.
Now hoping British loyalty to UK made will be enough to keep them in business. In Wiltshire, Lisa Edramer, News Hub.
Nothing. Nothing. Out of it. So there we go. Well done, Liz Truss. So as she drives around singing, and did those feet, looking at the fields, wondering why it's all gone to shit, she can maybe have a little look in the mirror. Right, so we're back to Blighty and the fact that nobody in charge seems to have a plan, either to prevent more climate change or even just on how to live with it, though the media are partly to blame, and I really do mean this. So I follow a guy on Twitter called @MrMatthewTodd, who is passionate about the climate, and he tweets about it very, very well, and so he's really worth a follow, actually. He also happens to be the former Attitude Mag editor. Anyway, he put out this clip, and it's quite long, and usually we keep our clips quite short on this show, but we think that you should just have a listen to it all. You will probably recognise many of the voices in it, because some of them are household names. And then there is one little bit, which is Mike Graham from Talk, and there is a weird sort of pause in the middle, but keep listening. We haven't fallen off air. He's just waiting for his brain to catch up.
How did you get here this morning?
To understand.
How did you get here?
Your car picked me up.
You're in a car, okay.
Yes.
Have you got a TV at home?
How much have the press taken the government to task on the fact that they're not educating people, they're not decarbonising the economy, they don't have a plan? You know, how much of the media actually helped with this?
Let me ask you, you've got a nice wooden thing behind you. What's that made of?
Oh, Piers, don't do this. You did this to Skeena about TVs.
Just ask you a question. What's it made of?
Are you talking about a set of shelves behind me, Piers?
They're made of wood, right?
I'm talking about the collapse of civilisation.
So David Attenborough said that the collapse of this civilisation...
Yes.
...could happen soon.
Well, he's not a saint, you know. I mean, he's just a broadcaster.
What do you do for a living, Cameron?
I'm a carpenter.
A carpenter, right. So how safe is that for the climate?
Well, I work with timber, which is a much more sustainable material rather than concrete. I also
But you work with trees that have been cut down then, don't you?
It's a sustainable building practice.
How is it sustainable if you're killing trees?
Because it's regenerative, you can grow trees.
Right. Well, you can grow all sorts of things, can't you?
Well, you can't grow concrete.
You can. See you, Cameron. Cheerio.
There is no plan, folks. We're being led over a cliff. We're already getting 1.5 degrees of warming, and people are going to starve in the future as a result of that.
All right.
And
I'm going to have to stop you because we're getting close to the end of the programme.
Oh, I mean, I hate all this bollocks, and we just hear it all the time. It's like, if you dare speak out about climate change, you're called a hypocrite if you have a car or if you go by plane to a holiday. Like, to these people, that you just like those interviewers that you hear you heard in that clip, you're only allowed to talk about climate change if you're like some sort of devout hippie who lives off foraging in the wilderness and braids your armpit hair, apparently.
I know, it is ludicrous, because I think we accept that every single individual sort of needs to make some changes. But obviously the changes need to happen at government level, and they need to be global. They need to be much bigger than the average person can do scraping out their Marmite pot.
Yes.
Although I was going around Sainsbury's the other day, and I did have a funny moment to myself, because I was like, oh, these toilet rolls are good. I'm going to do the brand. They're called Cachelle, and they don't put cardboard in the middle of the loo roll. So you've just got your bog roll, right? And I was like, I'll have that. That's fantastic. Felt quite virtuous. I went to Ibiza last week. So, on a plane. So, you know, there is that sort of whole tangible thing. But that doesn't mean I can't have an opinion on what government could be doing in a really big way in terms of renewables, or in terms
precisely
of telling me that I can't get as many flights, or whatever it is. So I completely agree. And on Jeremy Vine, one of the girls that was on that, one of the callers was like, do you have a mobile phone? And she was like, yeah, I do. And I said something like, yeah, how would she know where to get to the protest if she didn't have a phone? There's this poor girl banging her head against a brick wall, probably making really, really good decisions as much as she possibly can, and buying all her clothes from a charity shop, and yet they think it's okay to pick on people like that. Weird.
I know. And do you know what? You just reminded me. I had another conversation on holiday. I told you, it was good fun on this holiday, with my brother-in-law, who basically... So what was I talking about? I was telling him about the billions that the Treasury loses through tax avoidance and evasion, and like legal loopholes for the rich and their clever accountants. Anyway, he then tells me that if I feel so strongly about it, I shouldn't work where I do. Now, for our listeners, I work for a US tech firm. There's like no dodginess going on there. You know, really decent place to work. But he basically said, people high up at my US tech firm, they probably arrange their taxes in a way, in the same way where, you know, they avoid a bit of tax. So I should apparently quit my job because there might be some... Anyway, I mean, you're my brother-in-law and I love you, but what a wally. And back to our trawl and the tiny matter of a national drought. For, by the way, we are a country known for its shitty weather and constant rain. And yet we've got national drought. That is quite an achievement.
It is. Gold star.
I know. Well done us. Graham Simpson, founder member of Whitstable Skeptics and Humanist, pointed out when he quoted Caroline Lucas... As drought blights in the UK, our politicians have their heads buried in the sand. England's privatised water system is compounding the climate emergency. Instead of fixing it, the government has gone AWOL.
And he's right. So a sort of horrific sidebar of such extreme hot weather is that now we're short of water. And the ground is hard as nails. So when it rains, there'll be some flash floods, and in the meantime, privatised water companies have, wait for it, guess what, everybody, huge shock, prioritised profit over things like fixing leaks, building reservoirs and salination. But they have, Marina. Isn't that strange?
No, do you know what? It's not strange at all, Gemma. Because, in fact, I was on Jeremy Vine, like us both plugging Jeremy Vine. Jeremy Vine on Five this week. And I was trying to point this out to people. Because, honestly, I've only just come to learn about this and what it means. But, right, so hose pipe bans are coming in for you and me, right? Me and you, Gemma, listeners, we're not going to be able to water our geraniums.
And that is not a euphemism.
Where does your mind go?
In the gutter with all the sewage and the water that's leaking. My brain is leaky.
Oh, God. Right, so all the while, right, so hose pipe bans coming our way. But our privatised water firms are leaking, wait for it, 2.4 billion litres of water every single day. This is due to dodgy old pipes they've never repaired, not to mention they've not built one single reservoir since privatisation. In fact, I heard, although I'm not sure on this, that they're apparently selling land that was meant for reservoirs and leaking literal shit into our rivers and coastal waters. But this is the thing. They find the money for their shareholders. And since privatisation, oh my God, I had to double check this. I actually direct messaged George Monbiot, who's an environmentalist, because I heard him say this on LBC. Since privatisation, they've paid out $72 billion in dividends, which is absolutely
$72 billion.
Get your head around that.
I'm still trying to get my head around 2.4 billion litres of water being wasted every day. That every makes day. Me feel really fundamentally livid.
Awful. What a joke. Absolutely awful. What a joke. But it does feel at least like people are gradually waking up to this scandal. Parody Boris at Parody PM tweeted, "At times like this, I'm so glad we privatise water companies. Imagine if your money was used for boring stuff, like investment in infrastructure and stopping leaks instead of paying huge dividends to shareholders." And, I mean, it doesn't get better. The more you dig through Twitter, and look, that is what we do for you folks, the more you learn, and the worse it gets. At Dr. Henry Marsh wrote, "The news that the privatised water companies have been selling off reservoirs shows beyond doubt the limits of applying market economics to essential services. Duty to provide profit for shareholders isn't the same as public service. Healthcare is no different." And this, right, that to me, that's it in a nutshell. Because when you privatise a company, you completely change its business objective. It's raison d'être. I'm in France.
Oh, you're so French, French now. You're in France.
That sounds that's sexy.
Very sexy.
But anyway, you change a company's business objective when you privatise it. From a company that aims to deliver like a decent service and customer value to us, the consumers, to a company that exists only to deliver for its shareholders.
No, you're completely and utterly right, and it's something that is just blatantly obvious. But I'm gonna take the reins on this. But can I ask you a quick question, Marina?
Yeah, sure.
Is your brother-in-law going to listen to this podcast? He's featured quite heavily.
Right, I know, and I gave him a heads
up. And are you still speaking? And I'm kind of like slightly invested in the soap opera that's going on your holiday a little bit as well. Keep us updated.
Yes, and I will. And I've told him. I said you're going to feature quite heavily in the podcast. And I told my sister, who's his wife, and I said, look, I don't mention him by name. I do call him a Wally.
We should just get him on now. Both of them got a massive go at him. See how he goes.
He's really sweet. He just doesn't know.
I bet he's not. Of course he is. Oh, it's funny. Right, just going back to your points, all the points you just made about privatisation, which I think everybody is looking at the rail and everything else that's privatised and they're trying to go that way with the NHS and going, okay, doesn't work, does not work. Because that word profit, 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 it's the heart of the energy crisis, all the crises that we're facing. So let's go back to our Liz, right? Let's say she stopped driving around fields singing Jerusalem and looking at dead pigs and solar panels and rotting veg. And so she's going to say something on profit. So this was reported on Twitter by @BylinesEast. Asked about the fact that oil and gas firms have made an average of $3 billion in profits a day over the past 50 years, she said, "I don't think profit is a dirty word." She also said, and this bit is really infuriating, "We're playing into the hands of people like Jeremy Corbyn, who want to completely undermine our way of life." That's Jeremy Corbyn, who didn't get elected as Prime Minister, and who actually in his manifesto wanted to nationalise everything, which was an excellent idea. Best bit of his manifesto. So what's she banging on about? And John Jones tweeted, she's just because she knows that, again, like the people that she's talking to will be like, oh my God, that terrible lefty old commie, my God. When asked about, so John, there's no nuance, it's irritating. John Jones said, "When asked about the enormous profits being made by energy companies, Liz Truss says it's wrong to bandy the word profit around as if it's dirty and evil. Well, a £4,250 energy bill is effing evil." And skew, skew, balmy hairdo, gotta love Twitter, curmudgeon, said, you've got to be old to know that one. It's a little Trumpton reference. So anyway, they said, profit isn't a dirty word.
I've got no idea what that means.
So it used to be pew, pew, Bally McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, something. Anyway.
Okay, I don't know
profit
what you're
isn't
about.
A dirty word, and no amount of gaslighting to cover profiteering, which is the dirty word, and practice, Truss is actually referring to, changes that. And also, I think I mentioned last week, Fergal Sharkey, very good water source, the one who had that lovely hit back in the 80s, which I actually really like that tune. He said, between 2014 and 2016, Liz Truss was the Secretary of State for Defra-Gov UK, with direct responsibility and authority over Ofwat, our water regulator. You have to be careful when you say Ofwat. Sounds like something else. And at the ENV agency, the Environment Agency, makes you wonder if she ever read her brief.
Of course she was. That makes so much sense. Of course she was in charge. That's why nothing got done. At Vincent Walden, a designer who said views might be his own or his cat's, tweeted, Liz Truss said that profit is now a dirty word. It's certainly not. But exploitation is. Nobody has a problem when their local hairdresser, plumber or shop generates profit. But we have a problem with the inequality of record profits causing record poverty.
Yeah, we absolutely do. So, Liz, get this right. Profit isn't evil. But if profit means people going into destitution and dying, then it is. End of.
Right, I need some hope, Gemma. Do you think that by the time I get back from this holiday, our government will have got a grip on soaring energy prices? They might have, I don't know, explained their vision for how to combat climate change. Maybe they will have forced water companies to fix their shitty leaks. What do you think?
No, I don't, Marina. Absolutely not. And for a number of reasons. One of them is that our Prime Minister, our dear Prime Minister, Johnson, is in Greece on holiday again. So, all right, I don't begrudge holidays. People need holidays. But if you're about to retire in September and you've got a crisis going on and you've just been in a Slovenian eco-resort, do you really need another one? And now, Marina, can I ask you a personal question?
Go for it.
I mean, it's not that personal. But, like, you're in France on holiday. Mm-hmm. Have you gone to do a shop at the local supermarket? And if so, did your husband put on a suit to do it?
What, again, what was this about? He is a psychopath. And yet, did you see our shit rags? They were focusing on Keir Starmer's wardrobe because he's on holiday as well, which is just as bad because, you know, apparently. And he was papped wearing a £150 Stone Island T-shirt.
I actually didn't see that, but okay, so he's wearing a T-shirt. I mean, just sartorially, I find a suit a really strange choice to wear to go and buy some feta cheese. So there was basically this footage of him in a supermarket sort of staggering about, and then it was a really weird way to shop as well. I mean, I know I'm overanalyzing here, like, whatever, but most people take a basket and put things in the basket. He was like getting a jar and bringing it to the basket.
Because he doesn't normally do it, Gemma. And also, just one thing to mention, I should have credited this, but someone on Twitter just reminded me, said the fact that he brought his security detail with him to the shops in Greece, yet didn't when he went to party with Lebedev and Lebedev Jr.
But in between, I think, Slovenia and Greece, I don't know, it's hard to keep up. He just popped into Britain for a meeting, and it was really funny. The Metro just absolutely trolled him. They had a splash on the front page, and the headline was, PM turns up for meeting.
I had to check that was real. I didn't. I thought it was just a mock-up or something. I did not think it was real.
Nope.
It was real. And Twitter served up some greatness, of course, following that frankly insane front page. Philip Murray at @HNM_P_Murray said, if sarcasm could be said to be devastating, this is it. A brutal takedown of a lazy, contemptuous, irresponsible, odious excuse for PM. History will not be remotely kind. To which at @Mark37806 said, but the after-dinner speech circuit probably will be kind. And that's, I mean, who is booking? And it's true, right? But I'm like, who's booking him? Who will book him?
Not me.
Who wants to go to watch that buffoon talk? The great orator that he is.
Fabulous.
And James Pargeter said, well, there was some very serious urging to be done.
Oh, it's so true. In fact, urging was the... which, when you say it enough, sounds strange. Like, urging is like, I don't know. Was the upshot from the official quote on Boris Johnson's very own Twitter, which said, this morning I urged electricity companies to continue working on ways to help with the cost of living. Almost like, you know, when you urge a toddler to stop being a twat, you know, or I urge you, or I urge my teenager to stop watching YouTube but not do anything about it. You know, or I'm going to urge my teenage daughter to stop buying milkshakes, but still give her pocket money. I don't know, whatever. Mm, yeah. Silly man. And then Nadeem Sahawi was there too. Well done. And he tweeted some fabulous news too. Very, very encouraging, everybody, because he said that he and Johnson and Kwarteng had sat down with the energy sector to ensure they work together. So in short, they've sat down and they've urged but they've not actually done anything. And
you,
there's a chappy
said
who
urge so much that it doesn't make any sense anymore.
Sorry. I know, it's like the word, it's the word of the trawl, which is good because last week it was shit, so that's better. We've upgraded. We both know Davy Moore on Twitter. He's a great chap. And he did a clip, and I just thought we'd play just a few seconds of this. This is him on Johnson's absence.
Back to that. Boris Johnson, you remember Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the country? He came out in the media yesterday, desperate to stir up some drama by saying that the government isn't doing enough to handle the cost of living crisis. Who is it that's in charge of the government again? Oh, it's literally you. And fresh out of a meeting with a bunch of energy companies where they came up with no new solutions to handle any of the stuff that the energy companies are doing. It's interesting that it's almost like energy companies disproportionately lobby the Conservatives. And so they've got the Conservatives by the short and curlies and are pulling while they sing.
Oh, I love Davy Moo. At Davy Moo, go and follow him. He's brilliant. He's such a, like, so committed to the cause. But that, you know, being honest, I think this tweet from Amanda at Pandemonium is as prophetic as it is funny. She tweeted, "The 2022 John Lewis ad will be a family burning their belongings for heat and to cook a rat for Christmas dinner, while sadly looking at photos of Granddad, who sacrificed his life for a packet of value pasta as a breathy slow version of Things Can Only Get Better by D-Ream Plays."
God. It's going to be that desperate. And then Bloomberg UK tweeted how the UK government are planning for several days of organised blackouts this winter. And James Felton, the writer, put, "Looking forward to getting £300 a month energy bills and having to read that total by candle." Now, Davy Moo also alluded to something in that previous clip that I know that you and I both spotted this week, Marina, because we went all twittery about it. So let's briefly touch on the real reason sod all is going to be done to force energy firms from passing on some of their obscene profits to customers, because I know that we both spotted the same tweet from our mate Sean Adams at Sean in Sound, who tweeted some quite shocking info from Open Democracy. So, right, Marina, am I getting this right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I remembering this right? There were 30 plus members of the House of Lords who have investments or senior roles at oil and gas companies. And so their Shell earnings were nearly like 10 billion from April to June, and 23 peers own shares in Shell. So their investments increased by at least 640 grand in the last 6 months. I mean, flipping it. Talk about conflict of interest.
I know. Open Democracy, they are brilliant. They're a brilliant news outlet and, great reporting. So, yeah, that's from them. Sadly, that is true. But you know what? It gets worse, Gemma. So not only have you got that massive conflict of interest for 30-plus members of the House of Lords, you've got Nadeem Sahawi, who is our new Chancellor, the one, you know, is currently on holiday, who allegedly earned 1.3 million from his second job, not his first job, his second job at an oil firm. And then you've got Rishi Sunak's wife and in-laws who make huge money from energy firm Lynx. You've got a Tory party who have taken over £1 million in donations from energy firms since Johnson was elected. You've got Liz Truss, who was an industrial economist for Shell, which she boasted about on her Twitter a few years back, actually. I mean, the conflict of interest are just everywhere. At my work, I have to declare if anyone gifts me something worth, I think it's $100 or more, because it could influence my decision making, right? $100. And you've got people like Nadeem Zahawi, 1.3 million from his second job at an oil firm. I mean, how is it that all those millions, those dodgy links, those massively lucrative second jobs, those, Gemma, no conflict of interest there. They're all kosher.
It makes your mind boggle. I mean, I know we've mentioned it 100 times, but it's a job that we do regularly. So at Jeremy Vine, I really like the pens. They're great pens, right? And I always try to take one home. And then they've kind of clocked onto this. And so the runner now is, he comes and takes the pens away really forcefully at the end of a show. And I'm a little bit Tory, because I've been a bit like, I'm going to have that. And I sort of try and take it off him. At one point we did this really embarrassing tug of war sort of thing. And he's really lovely, the runner there. He's called Dan. He's so sweet. And I was like, no, I want the pen. And he was like, you've got to give the pen back, Gemma. I was like, but I like the pens. They're like my perk.
They treat those pens like they're made of gold. Because I've tried to do the same.
Lift, in the lift, he's like, have you put one of the pens in your bag? I was like, well, I said, not really, because what I'm doing, I'm replacing an old pen. And he was like, can you give it back? So I can't even get a pen. I'm going wrong. So at Nolan Jazimreg came up with a top idea on Twitter, and I'm going for this, okay? So he said, look, okay, this Thursday night, we'll all go out and we will clap for the energy companies. We'll be like, yay, Shell, woo! Because the Tories thought that that was okay for nurses. So I'm up for this. Thursday night, I'm going to grab a massive pan, a big wooden spoon, and I'm going to get outside my front door and save myself a whole heap of cash. There aren't many positives, but there are some. And there are plenty of people out there who are trying to cut through and tell it how it is. And it's my hope, Marina, that enough people start to realise they're being mugged off, kind of almost like things had to get this bad for a lot to be realised. And then perhaps don't vote Tory at the next election. I think we're going to just do a couple of clips to cheer everybody up. One of them is a little bit of Owen Jones talking, actually. And, you know, Owen Jones is a hard lefty, and sometimes he can be a bit divisive and, you know, perhaps whatever, controversial. But in this clip, I really think he's said a lot of stuff that is really worth listening to. See what you think.
Have you lost your minds? No, listen to this. Listen. This is such an important point. £4,400 energy bills. That isn't extortionate. That isn't simply a rip-off. That is a humanitarian catastrophe. People can't afford to pay that. It's literally impossible. Millions of people will not be able to afford to live in one of the richest countries on the face of the earth. Now, the fact that people are angry about this, fine. They're angry about it. They're yelling at their TVs. They're lying awake at night worrying about it. What on earth does it take in this country for people to take to the streets and actually do something? We can't just sit here.
I mean, like Owen Jones, right? So I think he can be massively divisive and sometimes he does a bit of harm. Sometimes feels like more harm than good, but he is absolutely bang on there. Another person who I thought did an amazing job. I actually only just discovered her because of this tweet. Her name is Antonia Jennings, at Tweeting Antonia. And I saw this rant from her on LBC where she completely, just in seconds, demolishes Tory ideology. Massive girl crush on her now. Have a listen to this.
So direct answer to your caller's question, yes, it absolutely is. The Tories have been in power for 12 years in this country. And if you look at every aspect of our society, it's in crisis. Housing, crisis. NHS, crisis. Climate, crisis. Even democracy, in crisis, right? So you may be able, you know, if you're minded to support the Tory party, to explain one or two of these things away. But ultimately, the buck has to stop somewhere.
Yeah, she was brilliant. If you want to see the whole thing, go follow her at Tweeting Antonia, because it was a great rant. So there you go. You know, there's a couple of people, and I just think I don't really care what people's politics are. I think at this stage it's right from wrong, quite frankly. So let's just applaud and celebrate anybody who's talking sense. But that is quite enough joy, because we're not here to have fun, Marina. So I'm going to bring things right down and update you on what Twitter has to say about Sunak and Truss and our favourite leadership contest. So this is a little clippy poos of Truss recorded off the telly. So the sound isn't great. This is from at Jude5456, who captioned it, "My God, our next Prime Minister, live tonight in Cheltenham. How far we have fallen. Embarrassing."
Now, in 1996, at the age of 21, I joined the Conservative Party. But I have a dark secret that I want to share with you tonight. Before that, I was a member of the Liberal Democrats. Look, I know I have sinned, but it was a teenage mistake. And all I can say is, in my time in the Liberal Democrats, I learned all of their dark secrets and dirty tricks. I learned about the bar charts with the fake numbers in them.
How just deeply cringe. She's so awful. How is she getting worse, Gemma? She's getting worse.
I don't know. And also it's like, love, that ain't no dark secret, babes.
No.
I can think of worse. I mean, it was... I voted Lib Dem. At Foreign Core One quote tweeted this monstrosity of a clip and said, "Dear, oh dear, I've said it before and I'll say, I'm not going to do a Scottish accent, by the way. I'll say it again, my fellow Scots. Let's get the hell out of this nutcase scenario and break free from the shackles of such political puerility. Independence."
Do you know what? She's doing a job and a half for Scottish independence. She's being so abrasive. In fact, I was on, don't judge me, I was on Talk TV last week with Jeremy Kyle, who is standing in for Piers Morgan. And a lot of people are like, why do you do it? But I feel like sometimes it's good just to have the discussion and you know, get points out there. But Jeremy Kyle, interestingly, he seemed to hold the position of not wanting Sturgeon to get her way with a referendum of Scottish independence. He actually called her, which I thought was really rude, that horrible woman from up north. But then he was also saying, I'm happy if they want to break away. Like, Jezza, do you want to make your mind up and maybe don't be so bloody rude?
Yeah, it is. It's just so discourteous. But yeah, doing the job for Nicola Sturgeon, quite frankly. And as for Sunak, older Will from the Inbetweeners, Johnny Nice Painter at J Nice Painter tweeted, "Sunak apparently ahead amongst Tory voters under 50 years old." Both of them. Now, I found a bit of Twitter gold. This is funny. So I have a feeling the lady host in it, because this was tweeted by Liz Webster, I have a feeling that it's a little bit of a pastiche, but this lady called Tory Woman is at Cheltenham and she's interviewing people who are members of the Conservative Party. These are people who are going to be deciding our next Prime Minister. Have a listen.
Isn't it wonderful having two such good candidates?
It is indeed.
Yes.
We're very blessed.
Yes, Liz.
Do you agree with Liz Truss, who I think if she gets into power is going to stop the Select Committee investigation into
Boston? Very much so, yeah.
Yes. Tax cuts or handouts, which do you prefer?
I think I'd go for handouts.
How would you feel if Boris was on the ballot paper?
I'd vote for Boris.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. Do you feel Boris should be on the ballot paper today?
Oh, yes.
He should be the only one on the ballot paper.
Oh, God. It was so disappointing to watch that. I had to watch it in two chunks because I was just like, I can't watch this. And I was like, oh, God, I have to revisit it now because Gemma's put it in the bloody trawl.
Because I'm sick in the head.
Oh, you described them really well, actually. You called them... What do you call them? Was it walking Tory zombies or walking zombies or something? Posh zombies?
Something like that. It's like sort of you've gone into a big golf club somewhere in Surrey or something and then sprayed something weird in the air and then turned them around, given them some kind of, I don't know, tamazi pan and shoved them out the door and gone, what do you think?
Oh, Boris Johnson's absolutely amazing.
It's really good.
Oh, they look like normal people. And then, oh, God. Anyway, right, Gemma, I've been thinking while I've been away, and I saw a tweet, and I want to do, if you don't mind, a new award this week. What do you think?
I think you can do whatever you like. It's our podcast. Go
for
it.
Okay, good. So I'm thinking we do something about, you know, most unhelpful tweet of the week, because I have one. And it's from Dan Hodges. So Dan Hodges, for those of you that don't know, is a journalist at the Mail on Sunday. In fact, I met him in person. We have a bit of, like, we spar on Twitter quite a bit because we obviously disagree quite a bit, believe it or not. But I met him last week because we had him on for a show that I do on Byline TV called The Table. And we had him on with Super Tansky as well. And it got heated because he is one slippery guy. I was going to call him something nasty. He's very slippery. Let's just put it that way. So anyway, met him. And his tweet, again, most unhelpful tweet of the week, was over a picture of Martin Lewis and an article he's written. Dan wrote, "Yes, we're facing a crisis, but does the BBC really have to keep promoting this prophet of doom?" Yes, Dan, you great big client journalist. Yes, we do.
Yeah, he's quite interesting and valid and on the money, literally. Mm. Okay,
can I just point out something out? Can I just put something out?
Go.
He seemed really nice. Off air again. I'm having this cognitive dissonance.
You always
where,
say that, though.
Well, what do I do?
This is the thing. I think that this is why it's important. Like, we were quite bit rude on this podcast, but I'm not rude on Twitter because, you know, I spend a lot of time in studios talking to people I'm completely opposed to, and they can be perfectly polite. Mm. And it's that rule of thumb, isn't it? It's like, maybe just say what you would say to their face. So I know that if I was in a Greek supermarket and I saw Boris Johnson in his suit, I probably would go and have a word, you know, and just say, look, mate. But yeah, it's an interesting one. Can I change the rules slightly and do two underrated tweets of the week?
Oh, that's a bit go for it.
Isn't it? Mm. Oh, thank you. We're getting away with murder today. So one was a little clippy poos. So Mike Graham featured earlier when he was talking about concrete. snorting like a pig. That is not attractive. Sorry, listeners. But Piers Morgan tweeted from Talk TV this week, and I'm not sure who was presenting, but Ava Santini and Mike Graham were on, and they were talking about the drought and the water situation. And I think we should have a little listen to what Mike Graham suggested as a solution.
In Spain and in France and in Portugal and all those other European countries, they have massive numbers of volunteer firemen who can come out, bomberos they call them, and they come out whenever there's a problem. And Britain is not on fire. You know, there are parts of Britain that are still very green. Yeah. There are huge portions of Scotland where, you know, it rains pretty much every day. I was once in Glasgow in June, it rained for 26 days. You know, yes, there is a problem. People need to be sensible, but let's not get hysterical. People are getting hysterical about everything. Britain isn't burning, you know. Just don't throw matches onto a brown site. Don't do it.
Well, it does have the potential to burn. And we're out of water. I don't know if you saw the Oxfordshire town today that is completely out of water. We haven't even got anything to put it out anymore.
Well, we're in a dire situation. We live on an island surrounded by the sea.
How are you going to get that into the middle of the country?
If I was running the government or the water company, I'd figure a way of getting a hose into the sea and put it into the land.
And can I also put...
I mean, absolutely amazing. Get a hose, and then pour salty water over fields. I mean, I'm just not sure that's going to work, Mike, but, you know, good to know what you would do. And then, so Piers Morgan, thank you. That's one of the underrated tweets. And then I think we need to do this one as well. So Katie Martin tweeted... and she's from the Financial Times, I think. And she said, UK servants, civil servants, sorry, not just servants, have been ordered to trawl through the social media accounts of guest speakers at one government ministry, including going back up to 5 years to see if they've ever criticised government policy. So all very North Korea. And Brian Cox, the genius who is Brian Cox, at Prof Brian Cox, quote tweeted it and put, well, in my opinion, all government policy stretching back up to 5 years has been a bag of shite. So that's one less talk to give.
I love that. Oh, Gemma, I think we need to wrap up here because I think I'm looking at my watch and I'm overdue a Brexit argument with my brother-in-law. So I think I need to go and just join him.
I could witness this. So good luck to him. And and just have a lovely rest of your holiday. Thank you for doing the podcast while you're on your hollybobs.
Don't be
silly. Oh, I just said hollybobs. Now I hate myself. Oh, no. Oh, I made myself feel a bit sick. Sorry, everybody.
We'll see if we can edit that out. Right. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. And again, we love the feedback. Share it. If you think there are people that will enjoy this, please share. But again, before we go, we'd like to leave a little treat for you.
Always. This week, the cherry is from Larry and Paul. They're comedians who are very worth a follow at Larry and Paul. This is one of them pretending to be Edward Beaufort, Tory contender for Prime Minister. It'll make you feel patriotic to the core. Quick, Marina, get your Union Jack out.
The sound of leather on willow. Church bells ringing out across a village green. Afternoon tea. Bulldogs. Flags, war, the backbones of Britain. They're what I believe in, and I know they're what you believe in too. As you may be aware, the Conservative Party is choosing a new leader for the Conservative Party and a new Prime Minister for the Conservative Party. I'm the Right Honourable Sir Edwin Beaufort, and I'm standing to be your supreme leader. I'm one of you. A simple lad born to Lord Sir Charles Beaufort, the Duke of Marlborough, and Lady Arabella Trevelyan Smythe in Belgravia in 1929. I am the dynamic and fresh start the Conservatives need. I've come a long way since my parents immigrated to London from Oxford, but my values endure. I value friendship with newspaper owners at home and inspirational leaders on the international stage. I value fairness, a fair society where we can all succeed based on our individual merits, something I learned in my years at Eton and Harrow. I value freedom, instilled in me by my Filipino nanny, who's forced to come to the UK to breastfeed me, and who still does to this day. I value service and celebrate those who have dedicated their lives to the betterment of these sceptred isles. You can trust I'll work hard for you as Prime Minister, as I hold no fewer than 14 other consultancy jobs outside my role as MP for Lower Bishops Twynsford. And after a tireless 12 years of service in every single cabinet of every single Prime Minister since 2010, with an unbroken record of never once voting against the party line, I'm confident I represent the real change this country needs. Real values, real change, real estate. Back Beaufort for a better Britain. Oh, hang on, I'll do that again now. Back Beaufort for a better Britain.